Well, to be fair, Jim, James, Jimothy. To be fair, Jimothy, the... Oh, that sounds weird. Are you okay with being called Jim?
I am.
All right.
Jones takes the snap, back to throw, steps up, he's going to run. Jones to the five, touchdown Giants! Daniel Jones on a 7-yard run on a 4th and 5 from the 7. And the Giants have tied it up with 1:16 to go.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into everything, Danny DeNiro's first start, first win, come from behind, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Smash the subscribe button. 5-star rating. Leave us a kind review. Before we get into the episode content, we got to take care of our sponsors. Now, if you listened to me last week and you checked out Overlay DFS and you entered a lineup, there is a very good chance that you are $180 richer today than you were last week, because I am. Not even kidding, because I think it would be illegal if I went onto a podcast and said that I won something that I didn't and made money when I didn't. I submitted my lineup last week. For the $22 contest, I finished in second place, and I won 9x my money. So if you're sick and tired of losing on FanDuel and DraftKings to sharks that have over 100 lineups in each contest, Overlay is the new revolutionary start-sit game for fantasy sports. They are the home of the single-entry GPP. So if you don't remember from last week, this is how it works. The object of the game is to finish with a record in the top 10% of the field to win 9 times your buy-in. So if you enter the $22 contest like I did, and you finish in the top 10%, you win $180. You pick 12 players that you think will outscore their opponent in total fantasy points. So 8-4, 9-3, I think I finished 9-3 last week. That was good enough to cash, depends on the week. You're going to make 12 picks, and some of the matchups this week include, let me pull it up, because some really interesting ones this week. You have the Thursday night matchups. You have guys like Aaron Rodgers versus Carson Wentz, Zach Ertz versus Alshon Jeffrey. If you scroll down a little bit, you've got a Colt versus Colt, T.Y. Hilton versus Marlon Mack, Derrick Henry versus Evan Engram, DJ Moore versus Terry McLaurin, Calvin Ridley versus Mohamed Sanu. Those are just a few of the matchups that we have this week. Stay consistent. If you go 12-0, the perfect game, you have a chance to win the progressive bonus of over $25,000. That's all you got to do. 12-0 in the fantasy matchups. So don't get shut out. Win like I did. I already entered my lineup for week four NFL. Visit www.overlaydfs.com today. And no episode would be complete without mybookie.ag. Promo code Gotham for that deposit bonus. I actually had a bunch of people hit me up in my DMs asking me for my Action Network username so they could tail my picks. I've been so-so this week. I think I'm basically break-even. I had some MLS picks last night that went 2-1 that I didn't log because it was just too late. But yeah, I've been hitting some Asian circuit tennis. I've been hitting some Champions League soccer and, of course, the college football and the NFL. So check out mybookie.ag. Check me out on Action Network app if you want to tail my picks. Tail with caution. As always, I've been too hot, so it might be fade Ethan time. But promo code Gotham on mybookie.ag. All right, that's it for the ad reads. Weiss, what up?
Ethan, how are you? You sound very rejuvenated.
I am rejuvenated. Well, we are recording very early in the morning, and I have become somewhat of a morning person. Got my coffee here, and it doesn't hurt that Danny DeNiro brings us probably the first, I'll call it the first week that we have been happy as Giants fans in God knows how long. I'm not even going to speculate and try to go back. Yeah. But yeah.
So I said it was the happiest I've been after a Giants game since that Sunday night game against Dallas where Odell took the slant, you know, 80 yards for, like, that was the last one. Before then, you can basically pick any game between 2012 and now. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was great. All right, so where do you want to start with last week's game? Danny Jones, the comeback, the decision. I mean, there's a million different places. The Saquon injury. You tell me where you want to start.
I mean, I think we have to start with Daniel Jones, right? Okay. Like, I think it's about how it made you feel. And we talk about, you know, checking off boxes. And we talked about last week, we want to get out of the season knowing without question that Daniel Jones is our franchise guy. Well, that week one performance, it exceeded anyone's expectations. Yep. And if you look at, you know, all the adversity he faced just in his first career start going against a very good pass rush. And listen, the Bucs coming into the game, that was a very good defense. People are trying to downplay it because they didn't play particularly well in the secondary last week. But coming into it, they were very good the first 2 weeks. Todd Bowles had done a very good job, and their pass rush was still there. Going against that pass rush, you know, Saquon going down in the first half, falling behind 28-10 at halftime, and Daniel Jones comes out in the second half, and I keep emphasizing this because this was his first career start. Like, this is not even like his eighth or ninth where we can be like, oh, you know, this was his first career start, leads a 28-10 comeback, and as a Giants fan, just watching that, the excitement, the sort of, he has given the fan base, he's given, and I said this on Twitter, he's given the organization life. Yep. Because this was a dead organization before Sunday, and now it has life, now it has hope, now it has sort of this you know, young quarterback that we can latch on to and hope that he can carry us into that next, you know, into that while we move on from Eli Manning, he can carry us for years to come as the leader of the Giants, as the face of the franchise. So, I mean, we saw a little bit of everything in that game.
Mm-hmm.
He played very, very well, played an amazing game, but he had his struggles too. Almost threw an interception that could have been a pick six, should have been an interception. You know, fumbled the ball twice.
Yep.
But you know what? That's okay. He's a rookie. Uh-huh. He's human. Those mistakes are going to happen. But you got to love what you saw, how he overcame adversity, how he played under pressure. Some of those throws that he made, those were not rookie throws. And just thoroughly impressed with Daniel Jones. And, you know, you heard him after the game. You hear him yesterday. I don't know if people watched that weekly press conference. But he's just a guy that understands. He's not going to let this, you know, his head get too big after this game. He's going to keep getting to work. He's going to keep getting better. And you love to see that. You love to see that. And I'm just taken back by him. Impressed. He's an easy guy to root for. Even though you hated the pick in April, we hated the pick in April, he's just an easy guy to root for. And I'm in love.
Would you say that you're in full bloom love?
I am. I mean, this is what you want in a franchise quarterback, right? The mobility, everything is there.
Yeah, I mean, just from strictly from a performance standpoint, the only thing that you could say that was bad is the ball security. And that's really just not a big deal for a rookie's first start. The mobility was there. The confidence was there. The accuracy was there. The dime to Sterling Shepard in the corner of the end zone. The rolling out to his left, resetting his feet, and launching one down the field. I mean, unbelievable. That start was everything that you wanted to see from him. We spoke about it last week. We don't expect perfection. We expect flashes that lead us to believe that he can develop to be that guy. Now, he showed all those flashes, 150%. And no one wants to be more wrong about being upset about the pick than me, than you. And it is what it is. So at the end of the day, we're thrilled. It was a great performance. The legs, I mean, we're just not used to it. And it's amazing. I mean, being able to run one in from 6 yards out, no problem. And he did it twice. I mean, are you kidding me? That's awesome. And again, I don't say any of this to downplay the performance that we saw on Sunday. I say this because there are, I think, some things that show up in the box score that may not be as good as we perceive them to be going into week two against, I mean, say what you want about Landon Collins and Josh Norman, but that Redskins defense isn't bad. And I know the Bucs defense isn't bad, but when you're playing up 18 going into the second half, there may be maybe a little more lax, maybe a little bit more prevent and whatever. But, you know, a 75-yard touchdown to Evan Engram, where Evan Engram's doing all the work. You fumble the ball twice. You almost throw a pick six. I'm trying to think what else. Those were the big ones, I think. But again, it's really not a very long list. I just think people, that and the fact that when you're down 18, you're going to be throwing the ball a lot. His stats were amazing. I started him in one fantasy league, actually. Put up 32 points for me. I just want people to temper their expectations because we're all flying super high right now, and I don't want the down to be too harsh for people. So temper the expectations a little bit. And just because his first start was close to perfect, I'll call it amazing, if you see some bad things on Sunday, it's not the end of the world. And we're going to see some bad things from him moving forward. And it's fine because it's his second career start. And even though you loved what you saw with the legs, you loved what you saw with the accuracy, there's still going to be some more bad. And he's not going to be able to lead 18-point comebacks every week. And, you know, Evan Engram's not going to take 75-yarders to the house every week either. So temper the expectations a little bit is all I'm trying to say. But bottom line, you are thrilled with what you saw. You hope it continues. And despite some of the play-calling issues you sort of have with Pat Shurmur, at least I have with Pat Shurmur, it just infuriates me when I see an NFL coach throw on first down for an incompletion and then fucking run on second and 10. Every analytic in the book says that that is quite possibly the dumbest thing to do, and we saw it a couple times out of Shurmur on Sunday. You said it, this offense was made for Daniel Jones. And I was always very hesitant to sort of judge Shurmur as a head coach because, listen, say what you want about his record, the guy has never really been able to choose his quarterback. I mean, the guy went 8-8 with Brandon Whedon in fucking Cleveland. So the fact that he probably had his say in the Daniel Jones pick, and at the very least, you can say that he knew that this offense ran way better with Daniel Jones than it did with Eli Manning. I mean, pretty much everyone except John Mara and Dave Gettleman could see that right away. Shout out to Pat Shurmur getting that big comeback win. You saw the reactions of some of the players on the field. I mean, Sterling Shepard was basically flexing and screaming and running around. It's the culture that you want to see starting to get built, that come from behind win, that happiness, Pat Shurmur, the faith in the head coach. So yeah, it wasn't a perfect game for Pat Shurmur either, but it's good to see that he was able to take sort of his guy and run away with the game.
Yeah, I mean, I like that you brought up Pat Shurmur, and I sort of, you know, as I was watching Pat throughout the week and then after the game, you know, when he was talking about Daniel Jones, when he talked about his traits and what he liked about him, he used the words "I." This is what I liked about him. This is what I saw in him. And I'm not saying this is a strictly, you know, Pat Shurmur said, I'm taking this pick and no one else has any say. But it's almost like he was the catalyst for the Daniel Jones pick. It was almost like he pushed it, you know, more than anyone, which is impressive. Which is, you know, obviously, you know, for Pat Shurmur and his offense, that I guess that's what he chose Daniel Jones because, like you said, he fits his offense. But it's interesting when you hear him talk about Daniel Jones. He sort of, you know, like I said, I saw this, I saw that. It's not we saw this or we saw that. It was a lot of I, and that's, to me, that's, I don't think that's just coach talk. I think that's him sort of saying, look, you know, I pushed this on the organization, and we saw how quickly he pulled the plug on Eli after 2 weeks. We saw how, you know, impressive Daniel Jones looked in his offense in his first week, and You know, it's
well, let's be frank about one thing. Yeah. I think if Pat Shurmur has total say, Daniel Jones is his week one starter.
I'll say this. If Pat Shurmur,
and that's not a knock on Pat Shurmur.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. But I'll say this, and I used to have that belief too, but if Pat Shurmur had his way, right, and he wanted to move on from Eli Manning, I think, you know, they would have moved on from Eli Manning. Like, if Pat Shurmur was adamant that Eli Manning cannot be his quarterback anymore, I think the Giants would have moved on from Eli Manning. Now, once they all decided to bring him back, I think they had no choice. Like, you can't bring him back and then not give him the starting job. Even though, you know, from a football perspective, yes, you can if he gets out. If the rookie quarterback is playing that well in the preseason and in training camp, like they said he wasn't, like we saw in the preseason. But it's almost like, his leash was much, much shorter than Dave Gettleman and John Mara's leash. What can we agree on that?
Well, yeah.
Like it was obvious that those two were not on the same page, because even in training camp and OTAs and all that, when we heard Pat Shurmur talk, he never really committed to Eli Manning being the week one starter up until John Mara made that comment about how, you know, he never wants to see Daniel Jones play in his first year.
Right.
Remember that? It was until after that where I was like, okay, Pat Shurmur sort of confirmed it by saying, that's the owner, that's what he says. You know, what he says goes, right? And so, because before then, he was never committed. It was always, you know, Eli's getting ready to start and Daniel Jones has to be ready to play or whatever. So, something like that. It was never committed.
But this goes back, and you never want to start a sentence like this, but say what you will about Ben McAdoo, but Ben McAdoo saw the writing on the wall with Eli Manning, even wanted to draft Patrick Mahomes as soon as he could. And we all saw how that, I mean, besides the fact that he couldn't coach, we all saw how that ended for him with John Mara and Geno Smith, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know,
I like the fact that he threw in there besides the fact that he couldn't coach.
Exactly. Yeah. But but point being, what John Mara says goes. And I mean, that should be obvious because he's the owner, but, you know, sometimes you just want owners to own, general managers to manage, and coaches to coach. But we're as we may get into later with another football organization that the Giants may or may not be playing this week, we know that is not always the case.
No.
All right. So Daniel Jones, two thumbs up from me, two thumbs up for you. Temper your expectations, and let's hope that he can continue to grow against I'll call underrated defense in week four.
Yeah, and then I like that you brought up the fact that, you know, you have to temper expectations. It's not going to be 300 yards, four touchdowns every game.
No, because that also indicates that you're playing from behind a lot. You got players breaking big plays. And listen, you're not going to have two rushing touchdowns every week. So temper. Relax. All right, defense.
I thought the defense in the first half, I'll say this, the defense as a whole, it wasn't bad. They just got beat up by Mike Evans. I mean, Mike Evans just destroyed Janoris Jenkins.
Well, I mean, yeah, you take out the one guy who accounted for 200 yards and three touchdowns. Sure, everything's going to look much better.
Mike Evans said, it seemed like Mike Evans was the entire Bucs defense.
Yeah, if you look at, and the, look Giants, at the stat line for Chris Godwin, it was like, dude, you had like three catches for 48 yards or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was all Mike Evans. Yeah. I thought the one thing I will say is the pass rush is starting to find life.
And whoa. Before we move on, are you not going to take your victory lap, your Janoris Jenkins victory lap? Come on.
I mean,
you got to flex a little bit.
I'll say this about Janoris Jenkins.
You said it. They should have traded him already. And then he gets burned like that. Should've.
Yeah, and he's starting to – there were times in that game where he almost, like, remember that screenplay at the goal line?
Yeah, he just,
I mean, you know, it just looked lost. And he looked like, exactly. But I'll say this about the whole Jenkins thing. Yes, I think the Giants should trade him, but the issue now is he's coming off like a really, really bad performance.
Exactly.
And they should have traded him already. Incredibly low.
Yeah.
And you can make a case that he definitely looked disinterested on some of the plays. And you got to also look at the fact, like, what are they going to do, play two rookies back there?
Yeah.
I mean, what is a, I mean, I like Ballantyne in a good preseason, you know, showed some flashes, but is he ready for, like, a full-time role? What, are you going to put Grant Haley on the outside? I don't think they want to do that. So, yeah, I mean, you're sort of really stuck for now, and the hope is you can sort of ease Ballantyne in there and ease Julian Love and some of these other young guys in there. But I mean, you just can't – it's tough to just throw him into the fire this early, especially when you have another rookie cornerback playing on the opposite side in DeAndre Baker, who had a very good game, I thought, who finally showed some flashes of what I thought he could be in the pros. Now, obviously, this is a performance you have to build on. The defense, as I said before, you know, it's a young defense, and it's about getting better each and every game. I thought the pass rush is starting to find life. Marcus Golden, 2 sacks. He's been – He's starting to find his legs. Remember, he had that injury last year?
Yep.
X-Man, O'Shane Zimenez.
Shocking.
But you know the big thing about him, like people liked him, was that his like hand technique was like a pro edge rusher. Like he seemed like he was
developed. Well, there was that video really that was going around on Twitter, and I forget.
Yeah, the one where he sort of threw the guy off him.
He literally took the left tackle, swatted his arms up, and then when he got caught trying to go back inside, with one arm, shoved him to the ground.
Yeah, combination of good technique, good size.
And strength.
I mean, and strength. He's coming along, too, and I think we'll see his snaps increase. Lorenzo Carter, I saw him get in the backfield times. He did a really good job against the run, too. I will say that, against on the edges.
Yes, I'll give him that. His pass rush needs work.
Yes. But I'm sort of getting impressed. And when Ogletree went down, I thought Conley stepped in and did a good job. He had that pick.
I mean, he should be starting regardless. Like, again, I understand why he's not, but, like, dude, Ogletree is just old, overpaid. The dude, what did he have? Did he cramp or he pull his hammy on the run back?
That was the most funniest thing I ever saw. He pulled his hamstring.
He pulled his hamstring. Dude can't even run 50 fucking yards without pulling his hamstring. And then to add insult to injury, you've got Paramus Catholic Pride fucking Peppers over there pushing him to the ground. Like, just a disaster of a play.
Peppers played well, too, in the second half. Like, the entire defense played, I thought, much better.
But they did that last week, too, and I don't understand. Like, why are they only able to make the necessary adjustments in the, I guess, at halftime? But part of it probably also goes to the fact that maybe when they're down so much, the offense on the other side gets a little more conservative and, you know, isn't taking as many shots at him.
It's a combination of that, and it's like, I also think it's a combination of them being able to generate a pass rush now. I think when you're able to generate a pass rush like they were able to do against the Bucs, it sort of makes the secondary job a little bit easier. And they also had a couple of coverage sacks as well.
Yeah.
So you know, it's progress. I know people don't want to hear that, but it's minimal progress, a step forward, and it's about continuing to take those steps. And with Washington coming into town, we saw how their offense struggled. Obviously, the Giants don't have Khalil Mack, and they're not the Bears' defense, but this is not a world-beating offense. Like, they have a bad offensive line. You can easily get to the quarterback. And their rookie, Terry McLaurin, who's the rookie from Ohio State, who's off to a great start, I mean, he's their number one receiver. So,
yeah.
Again, this is definitely an offense that the Giants, I'm not going to say can have success in, but can't allow to just completely decimate them offensively. But, yeah. Again, it's about making progress, like I said.
You want to talk about the Saquon injury?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Here's what I don't get.
Yes. You texted me this last night.
I texted you this last night.
By the way, you scared me because I was having dinner and I had my phone down. And I just saw your text and it was like, what do you make of this Saquon MRI? And I'm like, wait, what happened?
No, well, listen, hopefully we find out more about it today. But this is what I don't understand. You go down with an injury. You can't put any weight on it. You're back on the sideline in crutches and a walking boot. The initial diagnosis on Sunday is high ankle sprain. Okay. Mm-hmm. 4 to 8 weeks. Rest. Ice. Rehab. The sort. Monday MRI comes. Again, Schefter comes out and says, MRI reveals high ankle sprain. Okay, great. Nothing's torn. 4 to 8 weeks. See you then. Then, Mortensen comes out of nowhere from the parking lot, from the clouds, and says that Saquon Barkley is flying to Green Bay to get a second opinion on his ankle from Chris Anderson.
By the way, as you're talking right now, we literally just got a Saquon Barkley update.
Did we really? What is it?
Yeah, so he visited Dr. Robert Anderson in Green Bay.
Robert Anderson.
Yeah. And the result was no surgery, but there was the option of that tightrope surgery. It was an option, but I guess the doctor said you don't need it, so 48 weeks. See you then, Saquon Barkley.
Okay. All right. Scrap this entire segment. So, well, I guess from a football perspective, listen, this may be a take quake. I really don't think it's that controversial. I honestly think the lack of Saquon Barkley helps Daniel Jones' development because from a strictly football perspective, if the defense doesn't have your best player to focus on, you're probably going to be spreading the ball around more. There's going to be less dump offs, taking more shots downfield, probably more quarterback runs. Wayne Gallman's not like bad. I mean, he was a very productive player at Clemson, and hopefully we get to see a lot from him. But the point is, at least with Eli, the focus was always like, all right, run the ball with Saquon, dump off to Saquon, garbage time to Saquon. Now, with a rookie quarterback, yeah, you like to have that security blanket, but we're sort of under the agreement that this is a development season. Let him take the shots, let him make the mistakes, and at the end of the day, like, this team isn't going anywhere. This is a development season. No one's expecting playoffs. So, like, just get Saquon healthy. And then next year, you have Daniel Jones probably developed way more than you had expected, both from starting 14 games, hopefully, knock on wood, no injury, and a healthy Saquon Barkley.
Yeah, I think you don't want to rush it with Saquon. Obviously, you have to take your time. I mean, obviously, he's a running back, and you know, it's different when you get a high ankle sprain like that. About Wayne Gallman, listen, he's been around for, it seems like he's been around forever. Like, he survived everything. Like, he's
literally one of the last Reese picks.
Right. I think him, Dalvin Tomlinson, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, and you can count them on your hand.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you saw Dan Duggan's tweet the other day. It was a very interesting stat that of the non-special teams players, Dalvin Tomlinson currently has the longest Giants start streak.
Yeah.
Very quiet.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with the running back situation, obviously Wayne Gallman steps in, right?
I love him. A lot of people,
I do like Gallman too, but he does have a fumbling problem, though. 5 fumbles in his career, and he's never had like a big workload either. So that's something to watch for. But they say he's gotten better in pass protection, which is big, especially for a young running back trying to get snaps. You got to be able to pass protect. He's gotten better catching the ball in the backfield, which I think is a big. A running back that cannot catch out of the backfield, I don't have use for you. And then,
wait, did you say he can or he can't?
He can. He's improved.
He's a good pass catcher.
Yeah, so he's gotten better at it. And like I said, a running back that can't pass catch, I don't even want to talk about it. But I think they'll add a veteran back next week. But I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Wayne Gallman get his opportunity to be a workhorse. You know, 15, 20, 22, 23 touches a game. He's going to be the lead guy. They are going to call up Hillman off the practice squad.
Yeah.
He's at Rutgers running back, right? If I remember correctly.
I think so.
They'll call him up. And then maybe they sign a vet here and there. It seems like they want a vet who can pass catch. Benny Cunningham is a pass catcher. Zach Zenner, not really a pass catcher, which was an interesting workout, but Fozzie Whitaker, another guy. So I think what you're going to see is going to be the Gallman show, possibly with a cheap veteran that comes in as well, and then Hillman. So
I already I spent a good chunk of my fantasy football fab on Wayne Gallman.
I tried to pick up. You know, I had a waiver claim in for Daniel Jones and Wayne Gallman, but I didn't get it, and I lost my fantasy game last week by 4 points.
Brutal.
Because Saquon got hurt, and not just Saquon. T.Y. Hilton got hurt too.
Yep.
And you remember that touchdown that Saquon dropped?
Yep.
Remember that? It was a walk. Yeah. If he scored that, I would have won my game.
Yeah.
Just a short little.
I'm 3-0 in the league with all my high school buddies, my team is stacked. I know that there's like this whole thing you don't like to hear about other people's fantasy teams, but I got Philip Rivers and Matt Ryan. My receivers are Julio, Juju, Cooper, DeSean Jackson, James Washington, Golden Tate, and my running backs are Marlon Mack, Mark Ingram, Damian Williams, Wayne Gallman, and I got Mark Andrews as my tight end. And New England defense. An absolute behemoth of a team. Anyway, back to Saquon. Yeah, so I'm excited for Gallman. I really don't want them to go out there and pick up one of these like random vets. I'd rather just give Hillman the carries. I see no use for Jay Ajayi or Fozzie Whitaker or any of these guys. Really? Just like keep you it in house.
You wouldn't take a flyer on Jay Ajayi?
Not he really. He was hurt. And the only reason why, and this is going to sound maybe a little dumb, but like, I mean, he forced a trade. First of all, I don't even know if he would want to be here. He forced himself out of, what is it, Miami to get to Philadelphia. Right. Like, I just don't see why he would want to, I mean, unless he's sort of hurting for some cash, I don't see why he'd want to come to a completely rebuilding team where he knows he's going to be sort of tossed to the side once Saquon comes back. So, you know, if it's not him, I mean, who else? Like, Zach Zenner, Fozzie Whitaker, and I'd rather just give Gallman and Hillman the carries. Again, it's the development season. You know, let these young guys develop. And who knows, maybe Gallman becomes like a studly pass-catching running back to complement Saquon when he comes back.
Yeah, I mean, I will take a flyer on Jay Ajayi. The guy's only 26, and he's had a Pro Bowl season before. I think the Miami thing was a lot to do with Adam Gase. And a lot of people didn't like Adam Gase at the time there.
Yeah, fair enough.
I would take a flyer. I would check in on his health, make sure he checks. So I think he suffered a torn ACL last year, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he's had like chronic foot problems as well, dating back to the draft, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So I would take a flyer on him. But I'm in agreement with you. I think that Wayne Gallman should get the opportunity. But, I mean, I would also look to, you know, probably bring in, if I had to pick from the slew of veteran free agents, I would go with Jay Ajayi, veteran back. You know, he's worked with a young quarterback in Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, so I would definitely look to see, check in on him. And Ian Rappaport sort of hinted that.
Yes, he did.
Yesterday, I think he was like, worth noting, Jay Ajayi is getting healthy or is healthy.
Yeah.
That's something to keep an eye on for the Giants. It's like, what are you telling us, man? Just say it. So, yeah. I mean, I think we can agree. It's the Wayne Gallman show. We'll get the first crack at it. Then I think we're both pretty confident in him, right? I think he can handle it, right? Yes. He knows the system. So we'll see.
Agreed. Ooh, Redskins game.
Yeah. Remember I told you guys that I had a story for you guys.
You did.
So in case you guys didn't know, obviously I live in the D.C. area, so – you know, I follow DC sports a lot. You know, I know a couple people that work for the Post, went to college with people that, you know, work for Comcast SportsNet, and so work with a couple people as well that used to, you know, that are around the Redskins a lot. I work actually, believe it or not, I work almost walking distance from the Redskins facility in Ashburn, Virginia. It's insane. Like I can literally see their facility while I'm driving. Like I can see them practicing. Anyways, so I had a friend of mine whose son was, you know, coming out of law school, and he was a big football fan, and not a football. He played football in high school, but he was big into like coaching. He was big into watching film, drawing up plays. And so, you know, through sort of acquaintances that he knew and friends that he knew, he got in touch with Chris Cooley, the former Redskins tight end does radio in the D.C. area, and obviously he has ties to the organization. And he sort of was impressed by him. He saw all the work that he's done and, you know, met with him and talked football with him and knew that this guy, you know, this is a smart guy. This guy deserves to get an opportunity to work with the team at some level, intern level, whatever. Long story short, Chris Cooley introduced him to the Redskins organization. The Redskins offensive coordinator, Kevin O'Connell, who's going to be a head coach one day, was also really impressed by him, liked what he saw. So as you can see, this young man is working up the food chain. And again, he's fresh out of college, ready to go to law school, but he has this dream of becoming an NFL coach at some level, or coach at some level. Kevin O'Connell got him access to go to the combine last year. So he went down to this young man, went down to the combine, met various coaches. He's a good young offensive up and coming mind. Like he knows a lot about, you know, drawing up plays. So he went out and he met guys that are, you know, at the top level of what he's trying to be at. Andy Reid, Doug Peterson, Sean McVay.
Yeah.
And obviously met Jay Gruden, met John Gruden as well, met all these offensive minds and got to know him, spent time at the combine. And the interesting thing I learned about the combine is it's not just a tryout for players. If you're like a young up and coming coach, whether you work at some college, or, you know, you're just young and up and coming, you work at a high school, whatever, the combine is like where you go to get your interview, or where you go to meet people to schedule interviews. Because think about it, agents are there, right?
Yeah.
Owners are pretty much there. Mm-hmm. General managers are there, and head coaches are there. So everyone is there. So that's something I learned I didn't know. So long story short, he gets his interview with the Washington Redskins as a quality controls coach. Helps the coaching staff draw plays, cut up film, do all that stuff, right? And has his interview with Jay Gruden and Kevin O'Connell and the rest of the coaching staff. And they're taken back. They're really impressed. They like what they see. Offer him a position as a quality controls coach. Obviously, he's, you know, this is what he wants. He wants his foot in the door.
Yeah, this is dream.
He got it. Yeah, and he gets it. He's like, okay, I'll do it. And listen, you can believe me if you want or not. I'm not here to just make stuff up. But, you know, he, according to, you know, the person that told me this story, Jay Gruden was thoroughly impressed. Like, he was like, this guy is really, really smart, really, really advanced for somebody, you know, at his stature, where he is on a professional level. So brought him in, hired him. You know, obviously it's a job, just like you and I have a job. We go through a hiring process. Mm-hmm. And he's sort of on the cusp of getting his start date. And this all happened this past offseason. Getting ready to start this past, I guess it was either June or July they were going to bring him on, right before camp, right after the spring stuff ended, and it's like a transition to training camp. You know, there's like 8-week gap right there.
Yep.
So bring him on, ready to go, and Bruce Allen steps in, the Redskins team president, and tells Jay, you know, we're essentially freezing all your hires on your coaching staff. You cannot hire anybody, and you cannot fire anybody without our consent. R being me, Daniel Snyder, the front office. Now, a coaching staff that has no say in his coaching staff about who he can hire and who he can fire. What does that tell you? So, person that told me the story brought up a good point. Is that, hey, maybe Bruce Allen's looking at it like, hey, I had Sean McVay in this building. I had Mike Shanahan in this building.
Yep.
I had Matt LaFleur in this building. You know, and all of them are gone, but Jay Gruden is still here. And not a knock on Jay Gruden, but, you know, I'm going to freeze all this. But it just shows the dysfunction in the Redskins organization. So it makes you wonder, are Jay Gruden and Bruce Allen on the same page? No. Jay Gruden is going to get fired. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Yes.
He's gone, right? Well, the individual who I'm telling you guys a story about was told, hey, look, we pretty much know we're on our way out. And this was a coach on the Redskins staff that told him this, right?
Unbelievable.
He told, look, we're pretty much on our way out, but we're going to land somewhere, right? And he hinted
when we do, we'll give you a call.
Yeah, and he even hinted this. He even said, Jay likes you so much, he has your information that if he lands with his brother in Las Vegas, he's going to give you a call.
Wow.
So that's my story. It just shows how bad the Redskins are, and you see the product on the field.
Right.
But I was really, really taken back by this story, because it's amazing. Like, you always hear about dysfunction and all right. that. But when you hear a story
from,
like
right.
that.
Right, yeah, you hear from like, from the horse's mouth, basically.
Like, imagine, yeah. and he's basically told the Redskins, like, look, you know, if you're not hiring me, and here's the thing, though. This is the most craziest thing about it. They didn't tell him. You know, Bruce Allen didn't directly say, we're not hiring you. He just said, everything is frozen right now. And the guy's like, look, if you want to hire me, I want to get hired. But if not, I'm going to go to law school, man. Right. I can't just sit around. So tough spot he's in. Hopefully that guy lands a position somewhere. I haven't met him face to face. I've met the individual that told me the story, his father. I know very well. And it's just, they're all big Redskins fans. Tough time for them right now. Tough times it's been for quite a while, actually. But it just, it's the dysfunction, man, and it makes you wonder. Is Dwayne Haskins the guy for Jay Gruden? There are rumblings, you know, here in D.C. that, you know, Jay is not, was not, Haskins was not Jay's guy, and Jay wanted somebody else. Was it Daniel Jones? Was it Drew Locke? Was it maybe going to one and getting Kyler Murray? Was it none of these quarterbacks at all? Who knows? But it seems like, you know, they're not on the same page.
Yeah.
And it's not just the quarterback.
It's everyone.
They have signed players. Landon Collins on Monday night, I saw him more in coverage than I saw him any time with the Giants. It's almost like they've signed him, but they're not letting him play to his strengths, which is a problem. Landon Collins is not a free safety. He needs to be in the box. That's not happening. And if you look at it, you know, and I'll just say this one last thing about the Redskins. Players that have left that organization, Preston Smith, Breshad Breeland, Kendall Fuller, look at what they're doing now with their new teams.
Yeah.
Preston Smith's having a great year in Green Bay. Kendall Fuller and Breshad Breeland are having good seasons with Kansas City Chiefs. So.
Coaching matters.
It does.
Yeah. I think Dwayne Haskins should be starting.
I do too.
And my one thing, people are like, oh, well, he's not ready. Apparently he doesn't know the playbook. By all accounts, Dwayne Haskins was one of the smartest quarterbacks that people interviewed throughout the combine process. I mean, all you heard and all you saw was Dwayne broke down film and he nailed it. He understood these coverages. He was unbelievable. And I just don't understand why you're going to trot out Colt McCoy if Case Keenum can't go. I mean, what are they doing?
I think again, I think it's Jay Gruden's last middle finger to Bruce Allen.
This would be like if Eli Manning couldn't go and they decided to start Alex Tanney instead of Daniel Jones. Like, yeah, I mean, come on,
it's a mess over there. And then Dwayne Haskins continues to subtweet the Redskins as well. I don't know if you guys follow him, but I do follow him.
Yeah,
and he is subtweeting the Washington Redskins, which is absolutely hysterical to me. And the subtweeting started after Daniel Jones was named the starter.
He wants to start. He's motivated. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove that the Giants fucked up by taking Daniel Jones instead of himself. And listen, regardless of the whole narrative and the chip on his shoulder, from a strictly football perspective, he should be starting. He should.
I think he should play him. I know their offensive line is bad. He's not the mobilest of mobile quarterbacks, but.
Neither is Keenum, neither is Colt McCoy, you know? It is what it is. You got to get him some experience somewhere. They're not going to fix that offensive line in one offseason.
Well, I thought coming away from Monday night, I thought that the big talk in D.C. was even if they bench Keenum with Colt McCoy getting ready, the belief is that Colt McCoy would start over Dwayne Haskins if McCoy's healthy. But now, I mean, it seems like Jay Gruden has said that no, Dwayne Haskins will start. So I don't know if that's Jay's.
I saw that yesterday.
I don't know if that's Jay's decision or if that's Bruce Allen saying you're not going to play Colt McCoy or Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah. All right. What do you want to talk about next?
I think we have questions, right?
We do have questions. From Andrew, do you think Oshane Jimenez makes enough progress this year to replace Marcus Golden as a starting edge rusher next year? Well, that's the hope. I think three games is too small of a sample size, but you sort of like the flashes that you saw in week three, and you hope he can build on them. I don't have the answers.
Yeah, it's too early to speak on that, but yeah, I mean, and why replace Marcus Golden? If he has a good season, why not bring him back?
Depends what the contract is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
especially if they're going to spend a first-round pick on a pass rusher, which they should.
Yeah, but I mean, you can never have enough pass rushers.
That's true. That's very true. From RC Galley, this is a good question. I like this. Honest view.
Okay.
assuming they do things okay, say decent draft this year and 1 to 2 okay free agent adds at spots like linebacker and offensive tackle, insert joke, are they a quote-unquote year away, or are we really hoping for 500 next year and a continued process and strategy that is currently dubious? How long until they contend?
The trajectory that Daniel Jones is on is that he's going to exceed a lot of our expectations this season. Now,
it's been one game.
Right, but I'm saying the way he sort of played factor in the preseason and all that. Point is this. The Giants better be a playoff team next year.
I mean, listen, we disagree on this.
We disagreed
like last week or 2 weeks ago. They're just not.
I don't think that they're that far off. I mean, the defense needs a lot of work, yes. But you don't need to have a top 10, you know, top 5 defense. You just need to have a defense that's capable of, you know, not giving up what the Giants have given up the last 3 weeks. And I think
what gets them into the playoffs next year? What record?
I mean, the easiest answer is 10 wins, right?
10 wins.
Yeah.
In a division with the Eagles and the Cowboys.
Well, the Eagles made the playoffs last year with 9 wins.
Fair, but the Cowboys are now a behemoth. They're not going anywhere. Eagles are still going to be good. They're banged up, but they're going to be good.
But you don't know what the Eagles are going to look like next year. I mean, they just paid Carson Wentz a lot of money, and they're not off to a good start. They play Green Bay tonight. And again, obviously the Giants, they can't just bring the same people back and be like, all right, this is a playoff team. No, I mean, they're going to have to make additions. They need pass rush. They're going to need to, you know, the secondary has to develop, or they have to address that as well. Offensively, they maybe get an offensive tackle in there. Maybe add another quality receiver. I mean, obviously there's a lot of things they need to do, but I mean, I think they have enough weapons to move the football, right? Like Evan Ingram, Golden Tate, Sterling Shepard, Darius Slayton, who I'm a big fan of. He's shown flashes. I mean, I don't think 10 wins, expecting 10 wins in the playoff next year is not out of proportion, especially if Daniel Jones is, you know, continues to do what he's been doing so far.
Bottom line is, I think it's still too early to know. But if I had to guess based on weeks 1 through 3, I think next year is the season you hope that they go 500, maybe 9 wins. And then that third year with DJ is like, yo, you better make the playoffs. Otherwise, something's wrong here. Because think about it. You're hoping that basically every single defensive player that Dave Gettleman drafted pans out this year.
Well, pans out to where he can contribute on the field. I'm not expecting, you know, 5 superstars out of the draft.
I mean, that's fine, but like if you get like 4 BJ Hills out of the draft in the third round, it's like, okay, whatever. You need those playmakers. They need someone in that first and second year group to emerge as like that pass rusher on the defense. They need Baker to prove that he is a CB1 this year with Janoris Jenkins out the door either this season or in the offseason. They still don't have any sort of legitimate free safety. There's just a lot of holes, and you know it's not all going to be fixed in one season.
There are, but I think my point is that you can have a weakness on your roster and still be able to win games. Not every team that's, you know, has made the playoffs is, you know, have no question marks across the board. I think it's still a work in progress. But again, if you hit on your quarterback, everything else makes it easier. Your quarterback, if you have a good quarterback, he can hide a lot of your team's issues.
Absolutely.
And so, you know,
bottom line is, we don't know. We're speculating.
Yeah, we don't know. But if Daniel Jones is the guy, and we have no doubt about that, going into next season, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like, you have to make the playoffs. You make the playoffs next year, you lose in the wild card round or whatever, or if it's you win a playoff game, whatever. But then in that third year of Daniel Jones, then that's when the Giants are really, really good. They've filled a lot of holes in their roster. They're ready to compete for a Super Bowl. That should be the timeline.
Yep. Okay.
In my opinion.
We don't have to talk much on this one, but for whatever reason, I've had a couple people ask me about this week. Phil wants to ask us about Dak Prescott's progression. To me, I think Dak's been better this year. Who I'm truly impressed with is Kellen Moore, because I fucking laughed when they decided to bring him in as the offensive coordinator. I mean, if he keeps this up, he's going to get a head coaching job in the next 1 or 2 years. 2 years max. I mean, they might. Someone might try to
coach him. Yeah.
Someone might try to. Someone might try to poach him this offseason. I mean, no one has made a head coach look more useless than Kellen Moore has made Jason Garrett look over the last 3 weeks. I mean, and granted, the Cowboys haven't played anyone that good, but you can still get the schemes and the routes and what he's doing to get his guys open. And you can't help but be impressed with the offense that Kellen Moore has brought to Dallas.
I mean, the Dallas just went through their second preseason with the first three games that they had.
Yeah.
Now their real season starts Sunday in New Orleans. I know it's against Teddy Bridgewater, but we'll learn a lot about Dallas as we go forward.
Definitely.
And Dak Prescott.
Yep. From Ryan, did you guys notice how much better the defense looked with Alec Ogletree on the sideline, or was it just me?
I did.
I mean, Ogletree stinks. He healthy or not healthy, he should not be a starting linebacker at this point.
This has to be his last year.
With the Giants. God bless him if someone else wants to sign him.
He's terrible.
Someone asked about, let me see, I don't want to forget the name. I can't find it. Someone asked about Ray asked about the Stephon Diggs rumors. That's going to be a pass for me.
What's Stephon Diggs rumors?
That allegedly he is unhappy and wants to be traded. Which, one, I don't know if I believe it. And two, even if it was true, I don't want to trade for him.
Yeah, I mean,
Stephon Diggs is the player that you convince yourself is worth drafting in fantasy football every year because he always has that game where he goes for like 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, but then outside of that, he's either got a nagging injury or he's just getting 2 targets a game. Like,
I don't think just
develop the guys you have, and if you are in the position to either sign or draft an actual wide receiver talent in like the first or second round next year, then God bless. But it's not Stephon Diggs.
And also, I don't think Minnesota's trying to win a Super Bowl this year.
Yeah.
They're all in. I don't think they're going to trade Stephon Diggs, and I haven't even heard that he requested or wants out or anything like that. It's news to me. Sorry, I didn't know anything about that. Stephon Diggs did go to Maryland, so
yes, he did. He's your guy.
Yes.
Coaching talk. Cameron wants us to talk about the coaching. I don't know what else needs to be said, really. I mean, I spoke about Pat Shurmur. I wouldn't give his play calling an A+ this past week. It was certainly better with Daniel Jones behind the helm. Betcher, I'd like to see some adjustments made quicker, because I also want to see if the second half improvements are due to the other team being so far ahead that they just go conservative, or if James Betcher is actually making those halftime adjustments. So give me a good first half this week, James. Please, give me a good first half.
Yeah, I mean, coaching staff is what it is. I'll say this. I watched the all 22 first half of the – or watched the second and third quarter. I didn't watch the first quarter.
And all 22 is a game. Bit of an inside joke between us.
And I did like some of the route concepts that Shurmur has used this year. I didn't see much of it last year, but again, the coaching staff is the coaching staff, and we'll see moving forward. The team lacks talent in certain areas, so it's tough to really judge Betcher, as I try to tell people. But I will say that the whole, you know, miscommunications definitely have gone down. Definitely went down last Sunday than weeks past. I don't know if that's just them understanding the defense better, or if James Betcher has simplified things so much for them.
Yeah, maybe. All right, we're coming up on what I assume is your sort of hard stop. We've pretty much covered all the questions. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this episode up?
No. Are they going to beat the Redskins on Sunday?
I actually don't think so.
No, you don't. I actually think they will.
I think it's going to be way closer than expected. So, strictly,
you know why I think they will? Because the Redskins, specifically on defense, have quit on Jay Gruden.
Okay.
Yeah.
From a strictly gambling perspective, the game is currently Giants -2 at home, which implies basically a pick 'em on even field. I think a lot of people are going to see the stinker that the Redskins put up on Monday night. I think a lot of people are enamored by Daniel Jones. And just out of, you know, my George Costanza brain, I will do the opposite of both of those things. So I already bet Redskins to win outright. Would I be shocked if the Giants won? No, absolutely not. But from a gambling point of view, it seems to be pointing towards Washington. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a good game regardless. Good atmosphere at MetLife, probably the first time in years where the Giants finally have a little bit of life facing an NFC East division rival at home.
And if the Giants win, they're 2-2.
And, wow, turn the season around.
Then it gets more meaningful, right?
No, until you got to play the Patriots.
And then they got the Vikings and the Patriots.
Exactly, yeah. So we'll see. Again, we're not putting the cart before the horse here, but
Giants, I'll give you a score. I give you 24-19. Giants win. Get a late defensive stop too.
Okay. Like that. I love it. All right, let's wrap it up. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Check out our sponsors, Overlay DFS, and of course, mybookie.ag, promo code Gotham. That's it for us. Sorry for the late episode this week. We got a lot of stuff going on. Hopefully, we'll start getting back on track with the normal Wednesday morning releases. That's all for us. We will talk to you guys next week.
Peace.